Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Aria of Betrayal by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Patricia Santomasso. Chapter 1. The skin on Cora's fingertips tore again as her grip faltered on the slick rock she clung to. She swore under her breath, then blew out the rest of her breath in a white puff. "It was supposed to be warmer than this," she muttered. "It's April, damn it." Unfortunately, April in the peaks of the Rocky Mountains was not exactly sunshine and bunnies with a side of rainbows and unicorns. April here was cold, wet, and miserable, which suited Cora's mood just fine. She'd been hiking for days with nothing more than the pack on her back and the boots on her feet. She didn't need more, not really. Cora was a vampire, relatively newly turned and therefore still, in theory, brimming with magical energy, still growing into her vampire limbs, as her mentor Jack called them, but getting better every day. Only she wasn't. She wasn't getting better, she wasn't controlling her new powers, and she wasn't tempering her intense desire for human blood. Funny what happened when you got a huge dose of what counted as hard drugs for vampires. You tend to want more. Cora wasn't stupid. When she'd realized what she'd done, immediately after biting Holly Ashton, she'd decided she had to go back to where she'd begun. She needed more training. She needed help. She'd returned to Houston, seeking out Madame Antonova, the vampire matriarch who had sired her. She'd figuratively thrown herself at Ivanova's feet, begging for her help, and the matriarch had graciously given it. Now Cora was in the Rockies, staying at one of Ivanova Antonova's hidden enclaves. She'd been here a little over a month, training, and supposedly finding mental balance. The only problem was that Cora found it very difficult to stop being depressed about being a vampire when she couldn't stop being a vampire, which was what she wanted. Or thought she wanted anyway. She couldn't say for sure anymore. She lifted her head from the sheer rock face and opened her eyes, ready for another attempt. She'd spied this cliff a few hours ago, and it had instantly drawn her. Easily 30 feet high and almost straight up, it would be the hardest thing she'd ever climbed, and that was before she'd gotten close enough to see the death trap that lay below it if she fell. Boulders aplenty. She'd break 100 bones if she fell, probably get stuck and waste away in the rock. If vampires could waste away, that was. She wasn't certain of that. The little voice in her head that generally told her not to do stupid shit had wearily informed her that climbing the rock face was a dumb idea. Cora had gotten a lot of practice ignoring that little voice in the past and had trudged onward. It had started to rain. Then it started to storm. Not an uncommon occurrence in the mountains. It was common enough that Cora had already hiked through a couple of short storms. The wind blew cold, making her shiver. She wasn't cold, but her body was, and the slicing rain that soon followed would freeze to Cora's skin if the temperature dropped any further. The first rumblings of thunder had sounded as Cora reached the foot of the cliff face. She had steadfastly ignored them, shoving her foot into a crevice, and hauled herself up as the storm front rolled in and broke over her. Flash bulbs of lightning went off behind her and reflected off the rock, which shone with rain. She was over halfway up now, and there was no goddamn way she was stopping. Cora tapped into her vampire powers again as another flash of lightning lit the sky. The thunder cracked before the after images had cleared from Cora's vision, and the ozone in the air made the hair on the backs of her arms stand on end. That strike had been close. Close enough that Cora could siphon the energy from the air around her, which she did. Vampires could naturally drain magic out of almost anything. It was a handy byproduct of the enchantment virus that altered their DNA and made them into vampires in the first place. Cora could take magical energy from anything, more or less, and turn it into whatever magical effects she wanted. Before she'd been turned, she'd only been able to perform telekinetic magic, but now the sky was the limit. The boost from the lightning helped her scramble up the last 10 feet of rock face in what felt like seconds. She scraped her knee on the plateau's edge as she pulled herself up and over, but she didn't feel it. The blood that welled up in the scuff marks washed away in the rain. She sat back, leaning on her hands and staring at the thunderclouds blanketing the mountain range. She was shivering, and now she could see how close the lightning strikes were. The thought crossed her mind that she was well and truly tempting fate here. If she stayed where she was, as close to the top of the mountain as she could get, lightning was liable to strike her. Climbing down, however, posed as many risks for falling and getting hurt as climbing up did, if not more. Oh well, what went up must go down. She'd made it up, but there was no point in staying up, so time to go. The tiny Cora voice whispered that once upon a time, she'd have taken a moment to appreciate the majesty of the vista before her. Not many people could say they'd been at the top of a mountain in a thunderstorm, and the view was unarguably awesome in the truest sense. Cora looked. The thunderclouds loomed and rolled over the mountain peaks, hiding the rock and ice under a thick layer of dark, angry clouds. Rain lashed the rocks, making them shine like ice, or making them into ice as black ice froze on top. Lightning struck, thunder echoed, and Cora did not care. Numb from more than the cold, she reversed direction and slithered down the rock face. If she was going to die, so be it. Then someone else could send her mother and sister the letters that had languished in her suitcase for months, and they could properly mourn her. Cora wouldn't have to think about it anymore. She wouldn't have to think about any of it. She made it down the rock face unscathed and mildly surprised. That had been the hardest part of the hike. If any of it were going to kill her, that would have been it. But no such luck. Cora shoved her hands in her pockets and headed down the mountain. She wasn't in the mood to explore anymore. Not that she'd been in any mood to begin with. She only wanted to go home. Or to the enclave, rather. She didn't have a home anymore. Cold and indifference made her careless. She knew it, too. She hopped from rock to rock after slipping more than once and barely catching herself. She forded streams that were running fast enough that they'd pull her under if she lost her footing. She jumped down from boulders that even a safe landing threatened to snap bones in her legs. But hey, if she had a death wish, that was her business and no one else's, right? In the end, she slipped on a patch of mud. In the grand scheme of things, in the list of risks she'd taken that weekend, it shouldn't have registered. Down she went, her heels sliding out from underneath her instead of landing solidly on hard, wet ground. Then she skidded down an uneven, rocky slope with trees sprouting every few feet. She'd been making good time, too, she reflected as she rolled down the mountainside. It had taken her almost 3 days to get to the mountain peak. At this rate, she'd make it back to the enclave in hours. Her disconnected thoughts of travel time abruptly halted as her foot caught a root and jerked her in a different direction. She slammed into a tree trunk, gasped as the hit to the ribs drove the air from her lungs, and came to a sudden stop as she impacted a rock 3 times her size. Her arm hit first, having been thrown around by the spin, and she heard and felt the crack as one of the bones in her forearm snapped. She screamed. The pain was like fire. She hadn't broken any bones yet as a vampire, so she hadn't had any practice learning to separate the experience from her vampiric mind, which meant the pain was as all-encompassing as it would be for a human. Until shock set in, her body flooding with biochemicals in reaction to the sudden and unbearable pain. Then everything was peachy keen. Cora drew a deep breath and dug further into her vampire magic. The bones started healing within seconds, and the pain took on a different cast. Instead of burning, it itched like mad, and Cora could do nothing but lie still and let the magic do its work. There was too much stimulation for her brain to handle anything else. When it finished, she tried to get up. Nothing to do but keep going, right? Only she couldn't convince herself to stand, because she was exhausted and starving. The familiar desire for blood leapt to the forefront of Cora's mind. She swallowed instinctively as her salivary glands jumped into overdrive. Her brain provided in great detail the memory of drinking blood. She needed to hunt, now, or she wouldn't get home. A rabbit dashed from one tree to another, out of Cora's reach. Her reflexes took over, and before she'd consciously decided to hunt it, she was 30 feet away and had it in her hands with its neck snapped. Clean and quick, like Jack had taught her, it wouldn't have felt any pain. Not like Holly Ashton. Not like Cora, for that matter. She drank the rabbit dry. The blood flowed over her tongue and down her throat, slaking her thirst. Cora rapidly felt human once again as the deep, ravenous hunger abated, but intense self-hatred as quickly replaced it. She left the rabbit's corpse for the scavengers of the woods, rose to her feet, and let the rain wash away her mess. Every step closer to the enclave felt like another layer of silence settling on top of the disgust. By the time she reached the villa tucked into the side of the mountain, she was entirely numb once more. The windows glowed into the darkness of the midday thunderstorm. The bright light spilled out the front door as Cora opened it. She'd hoped no one would be there to greet her in her sodden, bloody clothes, but no such luck. Jack stood in the entryway, with his arms crossed, looking at her with that faint air of pity he so often displayed these days.
"Welcome back."
Cora couldn't place his tone. Was he angry? Disappointed? She was having a hell of a time reading people these days.
"Go get yourself cleaned up, then come to the fireplace room."
"Why?" It probably sounded caustic. She didn't care. "Is this another come-to-Jesus meeting?"
"No."
The corners of his lips tightened.
"We have new visitors."
Chapter 2. Cora grumbled her way to her room in the ski lodge-esque villa. When she'd first arrived, the beautiful place had wowed her. The walls were made of gorgeous, long, straight logs, perfectly chinked, so no hint of cold air got in. Inside, layers of quilts, afghans, and plaids covered everything, creating a glorious cacophony of cottage chic that melded together into a symphony of warmth and luxury. By now, everything was background. She had a preferred afghan that she curled up with on the couch in the fireplace room, but it had won its spot because it was the one she'd kept closest to hand, not because she particularly liked it. It was one of her least favorite colors, and the particular kind of wool used to knit it was rather scratchy. It was there, therefore it was the one she always used. Ergo, it was her first choice. That was how most of her choices went these days. Is it in front of me? Yes. Done. Is it not immediately accessible? Not going to bother. She'd hoped that when Jack brought her to what he'd called an enclave, there would be other vampires for her to learn from. Other people to help her through this rough patch. People with whom she could distract herself from her mind. Moreover, people from whom she could learn about being a vampire and how to handle the doubt and hatred that went along with it. Instead, the villa in the mountains was secluded and altogether too quiet, with nothing to do but training and reading. A gorgeous, wonderful place for a retreat, but not great for digging herself out of depression. At least the water was hot, and the food in the freezers was good, she told herself as she got into the shower and turned it on. She'd peeled off her rain-soaked, half-frozen clothing outside the shower doors, and the difference in temperature between her chilled skin and the nearly scalding water was one of the only things she could reliably feel lately. Maybe that was why she kept wandering out into the cold with no real knowledge of when she'd come back. She stood in the water for probably longer than she should have. Her back was bright red when she got out, which likely wasn't a good thing. She'd also kept Jack and whoever their new guests were waiting for longer than was polite. Cora couldn't find it in her to care, unfortunately. She got dressed in clean, dry clothes without any extra haste, left her sodden hiking clothes on the bathroom floor, and slowly went down the stairs to the villa's main floor. She heard female voices as she approached the fireplace room in the center of the cabin, all the better to spread the heat from the fireplace. One was old, one young. She had a feeling she knew who had come to visit. When she turned the corner around the wooden pillars that bracketed the entrance to the fireplace room, Madame Antonova was sitting on one of the couches. The vampire matriarch was as elegant as ever, her pale skin accentuated by her dark cranberry sweater. It had a high neck to match the tall column of hers, and her silvery white hair lay curled around the sweater's cowl in a thick plait. The person the young voice belonged to sat beside Antonova, and Cora did a double take as she recognized Ella Dixon, except she looked older. Cora had met Ella Dixon last November when she'd stayed at Antonov Hall in Houston for some time before being turned into a vampire. Ella was nominally 11 years old, having been turned by Jack on Antonova's orders a few years before to escape an unsafe home life. She'd been in the matriarch's care ever since, attending an academy in the Appalachians. The thing was, once you turned into a vampire, the aging process stopped. Your body's functions continued apace, cellular regeneration and decay occurring at a regular rate, but you stopped growing. Another quirk of the rewritten DNA, as it were. It took Cora several seconds to realize it was Ella Dixon sitting there. Instead of a small for her age 11-year-old with a short bob of black hair and altogether too pale skin, the young girl would have fit right in alongside any young teen. 13 or 14, she'd have guessed. The cheeks were starting to lengthen and hollow out from their childish roundness, and her arms and legs were getting that puppy dog look of not being quite proportionate to the rest of her.
Ah, Cora, at last.
Antonova didn't rise to greet her. She smiled when she saw Cora, but it only went halfway to her eyes.
It is good to see you again.
Cora's heart ached faintly at the sort of smile. Antonova was quickly becoming the main mother figure in Cora's life, easily supplanting her sickly mother, who came with far too much baggage for Cora's dulled, depressed brain to wrestle with. To see that she was disappointing Antonova? The feeling was gone as soon as it had come, chased away by the arrival of one of the endless Antonov House servants. Cora swore they came out of the woodwork.
Dinner is ready,
the servant announced. This one was an older man, lean and wiry. He looked more like he'd spent his days working in fields than kitchens and manor houses. Still, you didn't argue with the help, because they made your house run. Cora had learned this quickly in her time at Antonov Hall. Unlike many vampires who had amassed wealth and prestige and the staff to go along with it, Ivanova Antonova treated her employees with the utmost respect.
They must want to work for me, she'd explained to Cora one day, or else they will want to work for someone else. Money makes a big difference, but it is not the biggest difference. The biggest difference is whether they know you respect them. Could I do their job? Any one of them? Certainly, given enough time. All of them? No. Therefore, I need them more than they need me.
This had stuck with Cora, even in the depths of the rut she'd been in for weeks. She hadn't been the friendliest, but she was never rude to the kitchen or cleaning staff. Although she had left her clothes on the bathroom floor. Whoops. Dinner that night was a hearty beef stew with fresh multigrain bread. Cora ate some, but as usual, nothing tasted quite right. Especially not after having hunted that day and being reminded what blood tasted like. The conversation flowed around her like a stream around a rock, as was standard these days. Cora heard snippets of talk about arguments between magical dynasties in the Mediterranean basin, which Ivanova sternly told her scions in the area to stay out of. More chatter concerned Ella's continued studies at the Appalachian Academy, which Cora learned was called Roanoke. Over the main course, the discussion turned to Ella's aging, and as quickly turned away from the subject before anyone said anything of interest. Cora had the unsettling feeling they were avoiding the topic because of her, but she was too tired and grumpy to say anything. Let them have their secrets. Same with the conversation about the rumored female shifter. That type of thing was impossible anyway. Tabloid talk at its finest. It was over dessert, creme brulee, normally one of Cora's favorites, that Madame Antonova finally turned to her.
Why did you come here, Corinna?
Cora bristled at the pet name. Antonova had adopted it without asking Cora if she liked it, and at the moment it felt patronizing more than anything else. I'm working on survival and combat skills, she replied tersely, not looking up from her ramekin, despite the incivility of doing so. I had business to attend to right after I was turned, which you know, and now I can take the time to focus.
So you said,
Antonova replied smoothly. She didn't seem bothered by the slight Cora had given her, nor by her churlish tone.
You have been here a little over a month now, da?
Cora curtly nodded. She still didn't dare make eye contact, but she suspected that was more due to the prickling at the backs of her eyes.
A month. I thought so.
The matriarch sighed a sigh of regret. Cora had been experiencing a sigh of exasperation or disappointment, not regret.
Moya Mille, I worry about you.
Cora blinked hard. There's no need to worry about me, madam. I'm fine.
Ah, but I am not so sure of this,
Ivanova said.
Jack tells me that though you train every day, pushing yourself further and further every hour, you are never happy.
There's always room to improve, Cora retorted. I shouldn't ever be happy.
Perhaps I am having English moment, not choosing right word.
Her accent was thicker, Cora noticed, which was odd. She'd never gotten a precise number out of Ivanova about how old she was, and doubted she ever would, but she'd been in the English-speaking world for plenty long enough that bilingualism problems rarely tripped her up. She was doing this on purpose.
I try again. You work, and you train, but nothing is getting better. You are always tired, always unhappy. You do not eat. You do not smile. You hunt only when you must, and you are least happy after you feed. Most of all, Jack tells me, you do not sing. What is wrong, Corinna? When you came to me after your travails in Canada, you told me you had made a mistake. You told me of the children and the cult. I know all this, and it is enough to rock anyone's boat. This is fine. These things, we struggle with them, and in the end, we find our way. But you have not found your way, have you, Moya Mille? You are still as lost as you were the day you came home to me.
Maybe more, Cora murmured. She swallowed hard against the growing lump in her throat. It felt like she was trying to swallow a piece of the ramekin.
This is what I thought.
Antonova's voice was still gentle and calm.
You said you needed help. Jack has tried to help you, but you will not yet help yourself.
I don't... Cora cut herself off. Or to be more precise, the lump in her throat cut her off. She couldn't say any more. Her eyes burned with unshed tears so thick, she couldn't see her dessert.
I am going to show Ella to her room,
Ivanova said after seconds of silence. The sound of two chairs pushing back on the wood floor, scraping lightly, grated on Cora's eardrums like nails on a chalkboard. Then two sets of receding footsteps hushed as soon as they left the dining room and stepped onto the carpet of the hallways. Finally, there was complete silence until the fire popped in the fireplace one room over and Cora jumped. Jack pushed his chair back and approached Cora, holding out his hand.
Come on, Cora. Let's go for a walk.
I don't want to, she complained. Why she was bothering, she didn't know. It wasn't like she wanted to do anything else.
Too bad. We're going for a walk. Let's go.
Grumbling once again, Cora got up from the table. She shoved her hands in her pockets and followed Jack out, attempting to subtly run her sleeve over her eyes as if they didn't already know she was crying. Although, if they knew she was now crying because she was leaving behind the creme brulee she'd barely wanted to eat, they probably would have laughed at her. God, she was a mess. Chapter 3. Mercifully, Jack let her walk in silence for a good 15 minutes before he said anything. That was plenty of time for her to get at least a modicum of control over her emotions, even if it was only a thinly veiled stranglehold. The immediate environs of the villa included several well-kept trails, groomed and tidied on a regular basis by yet more of the seemingly invisible Antonova staff. Cora was beginning to wonder if there were interdimensional portals in the basements of Antonova's houses and one great downstairs somewhere in the world that linked up to all of them. That, or they all had invisibility spells built into their uniforms. Or the grounds could keep themselves. Stranger things had happened. Self-tidying paths, self-trimming trees. Surely you could buy those or enchant them for enough money. Jack dragged her out of her daydreaming.
I love the night.
Cora jerked her head up and looked around. She'd been staring at the ground without seeing it, as usual for her these days. What?
I said, I love the night, Jack repeated.
This time he added a gesture around him with one outstretched arm.
It's beautiful.
I guess. Cora shoved her hands deeper into her pockets. She hadn't yet divined the reason for this enforced, accompanied walk. She suspected that if she kept her mouth shut for long enough, Jack would tell her what it was about.
I've always loved the night, he continued, mirroring Cora's movement and putting his hands in his pockets, but with much less churlishness. I've come to love it even more over the years.
Cora tried to look around her at the scenery. They were reaching the edge of the tented grounds and starting down one of the mountain trails. Her gaze kept drifting back down to the ground.
I'm so comfortable in the darkness.
Jack sounded at ease, his words casual and relaxed.
Everything's so much more, but in a way I can appreciate. Not like high noon in a crowded city. Do you know what I mean?
Cora didn't. Her lack of response gave him pause, but only briefly. He inhaled as if to speak, sighed, and tried again.
Before I became a vampire, I loved the night. I found it calming, beautiful, and sometimes a little mysterious. After I became a vampire, those aspects of its charm only became stronger. Now that my eyes are better, along with all my other senses, I can truly appreciate how the dark heightens everything else. I used to love the night. Now I embrace it. Now I'm one with it. To me, that's beautiful.
I'm happy for you, Cora tonelessly replied. She was, or at least she thought she was. Her body was firing off the correct neurons for yay you, but she certainly didn't feel yay you.
I'm not sure you're happy about anything, Cora, came the quiet response. Madam's right.
You called her here, didn't you? Cora didn't know why she was asking. It wasn't like she cared.
I did, Jack admitted. I've been feeling like I'm hitting a wall in training you, and I had an increasingly hard time telling whether the wall's on my side or yours, or what it is. I hoped Madam could help me figure out that little puzzle.
Congratulations, you've solved my depression puzzle, Cora deadpanned. Gold star and a shot at the pachinko machine for you.
Jack glared at her, but it was softened as soon as it lit in his eyes.
What's going on, Cora? What's gotten into you?
Cora didn't answer. She couldn't, not at first. The question burned in her stomach like a wretched case of heartburn. The words longed to burst forth from the dam, but they stuck fast in her throat like a cargo ship turned sideways in the Suez Canal. Soon, the backs of her eyes would prickle with tears as she wished to tell someone and get some comfort
assurance, and validation. But the lump in her throat...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?